expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Karmic Path with your hosts, Tina Irwin and Laura Van Tine. Join us as we dive into the normal and the paranormal to break through the darkness and to help you realize how karma, spiritual law, and psychic ability all combine to open the doors of understanding. This is the place where we build the karmic connections between science, psychology, and spirituality. But can we change our karmic path? Can we help someone else's karma? Stay tuned and join us for an opportunity to look at life and spirituality from a down-to-earth, no-nonsense, practical perspective. The Karmic Path Radio Show with Laura and Tina, Better Karma for Better Living, starts now.
Welcome, everyone, to The Karmic Path. I'm Tina Irwin, and I have Raquel Murphy with me today, and she's our very special guest. I want to remind us all that we all have a karmic path, whether we're aware of it or not, and we don't live in a bubble, and all of our actions and our reactions collide and echo out. So imagine what happens when the karmic paths of multiple complete strangers collide in the moment someone has to call 911. Our passion is to offer you a new way of looking at life so that you can improve your karmic path. So this week, we are thrilled to offer a conversation with Raquel. And she was a 911 operator. And I know that you get to talk to people on the worst day of their lives. And I thought it would be, Laura and I both thought it would be really great to sort of look behind the curtain, because we never get to hear the voice on the other end of that 911 call that we might make. So everyone, this is the lovely Raquel Murphy, and we're just thrilled to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here today.
Well, we're really excited about this show. And I want to remind everyone that Raquel is one of the founding members of the Oil Lounge, and they're one of our proud sponsors. And I know we're going to be talking about probably at the bottom half of the hour, Laura's going to really work with, you know, finding out about the essential oils that you used as a 911 operator. But what I would like to do first is, as we're talking about the unsung heroes, and we consider all 911 operators unsung heroes, I want you to tell us how you became a 911 operator, and let our listeners know a little bit about you. And for those of you who are listening and can't see, she's gorgeous.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. No pressure there. And if you don't think so, don't like it anyway.
Okay.
let's see how I became a 911 operator.
Wake up one day and decide, I want to help
really,
the world.
I was really unhappy with my previous job. I was in payroll working for a restaurant chain and in the human resources department. And I loved the company, but just didn't like the numbers, crunching the numbers every day and processing payroll. And one day I saw an ad for a dispatcher. I didn't know what it was. And I kind of called, and I happened to grab someone on a great day. And the guy who answered the phone had all the time in the world for me. And we just had a really good long conversation, and I took it and I just started peeling back this onion. I started learning more and more about it. And it ended up being about a 2-year process to get the job.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Because you have
to apply. They don't just take anyone.
No. Well, they only take applications usually in January, and then they've reopened applicants in June before, mm-hmm. but it's usually in January. And then the hiring process takes about a year. You have to take an aptitude test. So they do a lot
of screening.
A lot of screening.
Wow, that's good to know.
A lot of screening. So when I finally broke the news to my husband that I was going to leave my nice cushy job 2 miles away from my house and going to attempt to become a 911 operator, he said, "I don't think you can do that job."
Oh my gosh.
So I said, "Oh, I'm going to." And I did. I actually took a class in Huntington Beach. I used to drive straight from work once a week, an hour and a half up to Huntington Beach. I took a class, the 911 dispatcher class that they have there, just to prepare me for the interview, and went through the whole hiring process. So it took me about a year to get hired and then a year to train.
Wow. Talk about unsung heroes. So You're married. Do you have kids?
I'm married. I'm married 19 years to a nice young fella from Dublin, Ireland.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, yes. My name is actually Raquel Renee Rojo Murphy. And I have two children. My daughter, Dylan, just turned 15. And my son, Declan, will be 14 in August. So they're very close in age.
Wow. All right. So how long did you have the job as a 911 operator?
I was a 911 operator just 1 week shy to the day of 4 years.
And why did you stop?
It really became too much. I knew that my husband's career was taking a different trajectory, and it really demanded a lot of my time. It took a lot of my energy. It really, really, it was a difficult job to take your headsets off, set it down, and walk away. It was always very heavy. You know, obviously people are calling on their worst day of their life.
Yeah.
So it's never a good reason to call 911. So it just became very heavy, and my husband's career was taking a different turn, and we wanted me to be home to take care of the kids.
Okay. All right.
And pursue my oils.
All right. So talk to me about some of the most powerful lessons you learned as a 911 operator, because we know we're going to talk about how to help your children if they have to call 911. So we're going to get to that. But some of the most important things that you would want someone to know, or some of the most poignant stories that really left an impression on you?
Well, one of the things that once I went into training and I discovered the whole process with it, and I was a fire medical dispatcher. So that meant I was with the San Diego Fire Department.
Okay.
And I was handling medical calls and fire calls, traffic accidents, that goes under that umbrella. It could be a hydrant out. It could be a water spill. All of those calls come to the fire department. Originally, PD, when you call 911 here in the city of San Diego, PD actually answers the phone first. So they're the primary PSAP. They screen the calls.
You're calling the police department when you call 911. They screen the calls and then they hand it off to you.
Yes. So they'll screen the call and they'll say, 911, what's the address of your emergency? What is your emergency? And so it could be, I'm stuck on the freeway on the 5 and I'm in a really dangerous position. It could be someone's breaking into my house. They're going to keep the call. As soon as you say something to the effect of medical, my husband's having a heart attack, I just found my child in the pool, whatever, those calls will get transferred then to San Diego Fire. And then that's when we pick up, and we would have to get the most important thing that they would have to get. The information is they need your address and they need a cross street. We do have the technology to actually zero in and geolocate, but they don't use it. Not yet.
It's not quite there.
Well, no, it's there and it's been there, but it has been voted against because people don't want them to be found. Individuals don't want to be found to the pinpoint. We can geolocate them up to 100 yards, which is the size of a football field. So if it was a condominium complex or an apartment complex, and there's 100 units in the span of 100 yards, they can't just head in that direction because they're not going to go knock on all the doors of all the units. So we really need an address and a cross street. And that is the most important thing. That was my biggest takeaway. And as I was going through training, a light would go on. I have to talk to my mom. I have to call my mom. I need my mom to know this. A light would go on. I have to let my sisters know this. Or I need to make sure my friends know this. And one of the things, for example, is my mom is, she tends to have the Hispanic panic, where she's Puerto Rican and a lot of passion. So I used to tell her, don't panic. If you ever have to call 911 for dad, or for if you're watching any of the grandkids, do not panic, because it's just wasting time. As scared as you might be, the most important thing is compose yourself, call 911. If you're not in a location that you're familiar with, let's say you fell today and I'm here and I don't know the address of this location. So what am I going to do to find the address of this location? I'm going to go to look at the front and see the address. I'm going to look out on the street. I'm going to look for a magazine. I'm going to look for
an address,
a bill, an address, just something that we can confirm the address.
Can you tell us the recount the story of the couple that was on the phone with you and they were really angry with you?
Oh, and yes, you're keeping your composure. Yeah.
But this is a really powerful story because this in this story, someone's really angry with Raquel. So share with that.
Okay.
Share that one with us, please.
So what would happen is when we answer the call, we have three different screens up in front of us. And one will be the screen for the telephone. That's always on our left. That's why I'm pointing to my left. And the lat long will drop in.
The latitude and longitude.
Yes. Yes. So we know what we know. Have a general idea of what part of town they're coming in. So I was saying my medical number, fire medical 349, what's the address of your emergency? And she was saying, for example, 1234 Blue Street. And it wouldn't hit in that location. It wouldn't hit anywhere around. And I said, ma'am, what is the address of your emergency? And she was just freaking out and she was screaming and it was something about her kid. And what we're trained is repetitive persistence, where we have to ask the question again and we have to stay very monotone and we can't go any higher. We have to continue. What's the address of your emergency? Ma'am, I'd really like to help you, but what is the address of your emergency? And we have to stay right there because if we go higher with them, they're going to go higher and we have to stay low. So they have to stop screaming so they can hear us.
Good psychology.
So she kept insisting that her address was 1234 Blue Street. And I was saying, that's not a location. Ma'am, please look for something. Look for a bill. And she was screaming that she was new, but the address is 1234 Blue Street. She was new to this location. But she was screaming, I mean, calling me every name in the book.
Wow.
Just send help, just send help, just send help. So I finally heard someone in the background. And I said, who is that back there? And she said, my husband. I said, put him on the phone. He got on the phone and I said, what is the address of your emergency? And he said, 1234 Blue Street. I said, sir, get a bill, get a magazine, go to the front door. This is not the correct address. So he went and picked up a bill and he said, it's 4321 Blue Street. Now I'm just making up that address, but that's what happened. They were mixing up the numbers. And as soon as they said it, it hit. They gave us the cross street and we were heading there. And the son, and then she was profusely apologetic afterwards. She had just lost her father the day before.
Oh my gosh, she was really having a
really
horrible couple of days.
Horrible couple of days. Her father died suddenly and her son was having a cerebral seizure.
Oh my gosh.
And so her emotions were just so high. When emotions are running high, logic is running low. And, you know, she just was crying and saying she's sorry. And we followed all those steps to take care of her son in the seizure. And the paramedics got there right away. But those are just some of the things that we had to do. We had to stay very calm in spite of her just screaming, send help, send help, send help. And
okay. You also shared with us previously a story of a woman who is having an asthmatic attack. And this story really goes to the heart of what happens to us when we are each in a place of enormous crisis. And I think we just kind of blew through a break. So, Kat, I'm really sorry. But we're going to keep going because this information is really so important for everyone who's listening. And in this particular case, this woman was having a personal crisis and she was alone. And this, can you share that story?
Sure. I was actually in training and I received the call and I was there with my trainer. And so he was able to listen on the line with me. And by the time she called, she was having difficulty breathing. She could barely get words.
She had asthma.
She had asthma. And we were able to, she couldn't speak. And we just had the lat longs, the latitude, longitudes, those coordinates. But she was in a part of town where there's heavy apartments, heavy condominiums and alleys, a lot of alleys where people have their cars pulling out, right. Like their garages are in the back way and pulling out of the alleys. And she couldn't get the words out. So we sent in that direction. We kind of asked questions so we knew. And then she said the part of town that she was in. So we kind of knew that. And because she couldn't speak, we knew it was difficulty breathing. We were asking her questions. She was saying yes, no. So we sent in that direction. But because she waited so long and she was by herself. We couldn't get any information. And so she waited until to call 911 until she went into her car. So she was in her garage and she was really, she was losing consciousness, and you can tell that she was having just a real struggle breathing. And it was a breathing struggle that I have never heard before. I've never heard the pant almost. It was a panting. And I got her to open the garage door. I knew I can hear the car. I can hear the beeping of the car. And I said, "Are you in your car?" And she would say, "Yes." I'm like, "Open the garage door. Can you open the garage door?" So you kind of have to put yourself in that.
So you're
location.
Using your intuition.
Using my intuition by like trying to put myself and trying to visualize where she is and what she's seeing. So I just thought, you know, obviously most people have garage door openers. I said, "Do you have a garage door opener? Put it, raise it up." So she did. I said, "Can you back your car out?" So she backed her car out. And I think she got her car just out. So she was in the alley and in the driveway. And she just was struck. She was struggling to talk, struggling to breathe. So I told her to honk the horn. "Is there anyone around that you can flag down?" There was nobody around. So I had her laying on the horn and she was honking the horn. And then I can hear people yelling like, "Stop honking." And I was like, "Do they see you?" And so I knew, like, we knew she was going. We had the ambulance and the fire department heading in that direction. I was typing, "She's in a car. She's, you know, halfway out of, we think she's out of a garage. The garage door is open." Just any information that I was getting from her, I was typing and relaying it to them as they were driving there. And I realized very quickly that she wasn't going to be with us much longer. So all I thought was, my goodness, my voice is going to be the last voice that she hears. And she must be so frightened. So I just reassured her. I said, "Help is on the way. We have help coming. Help is on the way. We have help coming." And I kept saying it all the way. And you can hear her breath getting faint and faint and faint. And that was really heavy. I actually called Misty, who's also an oil lounge founder. Mm-hmm. I said, "Oh my goodness, it took me 2 years to get this job. I'm going to have to at least stay with it for 1 year," because it was very, very heavy.
It was very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And they did find her eventually.
They did find her, but I don't think that she made it.
Now, one of the things that I really want to focus on over the next 10 minutes or so until we have the bottom of the hour break, which we have to go to.
Okay.
I want you to talk about what should parents be telling their children about if they have to call 911, what should a child know and at what age should you start? Not, you don't want to alarm your children, but you could make it a game. What would you recommend for parents? Because I sent out an email that I wanted a lot of people, hopefully, to listen to this, because you never know whose life you might save. It could be your own.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, even before I was a 911 operator, I always go by the motto, safety never takes a holiday.
Correct.
So my children knew my phone number by heart when they were 2 and 3 years old. Mm-hmm. I would say it to them every day when we were driving the car with mommy's number, and they would, you know, they would repeat it. And eventually they got it and they knew that by heart. So when calling 911, and we did, now I no longer get these calls, but my friends that are still there, who are amazing and have been there forever, they're still getting the calls. And we get a lot of children. We call them RPs, which is reporting parties. And what you want to know, obviously, if you're at home, teach your children your address, you know, 1234 Blue Street, you know, test them all the time to know their address. But one of the things that I would do with my kids, because I would think about those kids where the mom passed out driving down the road and she's in front of TJ Maxx in National City, or, you know, and I would have to, she would say, "I don't know where I am. I'm in the car. I'm on the street." And then I would have to, then we literally play like charades. I would say, "What do you see? Tell me what you see." And then she would name stores. Okay. In front of that store, what number do you see? Is there a number? Is there an address? And then we would get an address. So then we would have to type in that store, and then we'd put in the address, then we'd have choices. What else do you see? So we can use the lat long and then what we're finding on the computer. So we'd have to play a little game, put a little puzzle together, because you also don't want, we also didn't want to send lights and sirens to the wrong location. because then you're putting the firefighters at risk and you're putting the city at risk anytime they go lights and sirens, because it's a really big vehicle that they're traveling in. So you always want to know, obviously we know the location, they're going to send lights and sirens if that's a level one call, but we don't want to just send them to the wrong location. That is like the biggest thing that we had to make sure we were sending them to the right location. So we would just try to play those, you know, try to figure out where they are. So one of the things I would do with my kids is we would, let's say one day I'm pumping gas and I would say to my kids, okay, I'm pumping gas and mommy all of a sudden looks at you and says, I don't feel well and I pass out. What do you do? And they would say, call 911. Okay. And they're going to say, what's the address of your emergency? Where are you? And they would say 7-Eleven. And I'd go, okay, which 7-Eleven are you at? And then I'd say, how are you going to know this? So then they would be sitting in the back of the SUV, you know, looking around. Oh, I see that street, Business Park. Okay. What else do you see? Oh, I see that street, San Marcos Boulevard. Okay. So now they know where you are. And now you can tell them, what color is my car? And, you know, and so those are some of the things that I would do. I would just kind of make them aware of it. Another little thing that I would do is we would hike a lot in my neighborhood or around us. We have canyons near us. And I'd always tell them, when you start your hike, look at the time. So if you ever get lost, you need to say, I've been hiking for 30 minutes. I've been hiking for 40 minutes. So then they can kind of get an idea of how far up the mountain you are. Because we have more rescues, Cowles Mountains, because people just are hiking willy-nilly on their own and not paying attention. What? How long have you been hiking? I don't know. So now it's a full rescue and there's a lot of resources looking for that person who's lost and they don't even know how long they've been hiking. So you're sending all of that,
energy, all of these rescuers,
all of these resources that are going there, and they could only be hiking for 20 minutes. So, you know, the ranger would probably find them before we'd get them. Or somebody was hiking for a good hour and a half, and then it's going all the way up, and it's a true rescue.
Wow. That's just, what is the youngest child you ever had to deal with? You have a recall of that.
Oh, goodness. There were so many.
Like a four-year-old?
Do you mean as a reporting party?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, we had a lot of 5, 6, 7, 8 year olds. You know, a lot of times kids had to call for their parents because their parents couldn't speak English.
Or their grandparents.
Or their grandparents because they couldn't speak English. Wow. And one thing is they do have a translation service. So there are a lot of people in the room that speak a lot of different languages, but there is a translation service. For example, there's an area in San Diego that has, I think, like 18 different dialects of African.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Like I think Somali and like Ethiopian. Yeah. Different dialects. So we could get a translator on the phone with them right away. Mm-hmm. So, but it was just faster, you know, if there was somebody.
Nice to know your tax dollars are going to help so many people.
Oh yeah.
That's a really remarkable level.
Yeah.
And so children, did you find children panicked?
Children were a lot more calm than parents.
Did that surprise you?
You know, I got used to it right away and I was so impressed with kids. And one of the things that they would do is if you had a kid, a child as a reporting party, they would always want us to file that because at the end of the year, every year, they always pick a child that saved someone. And they celebrate them. Yeah.
That is a really cool thing.
Yeah. So I always like that they did that because it's always nice to hear, like, even in the worst of times, that a child can come and be the hero and save the day. So I love that they did that. And everybody loved that about that too. So nobody, if you ever had a child reporting party, everybody would usually fill it out right away.
Wow. So when you're listening to someone who's telling you something on the worst day of their life, are there any stories that stick out in your mind that were really quite a success story? No pressure. We have 3 minutes.
Okay. All right. I'll be really fast. I had a mom that called and she said, I just walked into the garage and my son hung himself. And I said, because you can't assume just because he's on the rope that he's dead. Because he can still be breathing. Mm-hmm. So one of the, you get him down right away. And she's like, I can't. He's heavy. There's all these boxes in the garage. And I said, I want to help you
help your son. I need you to do whatever you can to help your son. I'm here to help you, but you need to help him. And she put the phone down and she came back a soldier. She's like, he's down. What do I do next? Let's loosen the rope. Then we start, and I start guiding her with CPR. And when you can, you can't really see, or you, it's for HIPAA reasons. We don't know their names. We don't know their faces,
right,
but you can see what level they go. And level one is lights and sirens. Like, they are just really, really bad. And he was level three. So they must have, and it appeared that they stabilized him.
So he survived.
Yeah. Look, I mean, it seemed that way because we weren't in talk with the hospitals, but you can kind of look at the screen and get the information. But the coroner didn't go to that house.
Wow.
Yeah. And she saved him, but she was so impressive because she was panicking and screaming, and I got her together and she put that phone down and she came back up and she was like a soldier. I'm ready.
So,
what do I do?
So from your point of view, and I think this is important if any of us are in a type of emergency like this, it is if you're in a serious emergency situation, take a deep breath.
Take a deep breath, because panicking just wastes time.
Panicking wastes time and energy, and someone's life is at stake. Mm-hmm. And if you can center yourself for a fraction, even a fraction of a second.
Take a deep breath, clear your thoughts.
So that you can really be a strong force for helping the person in front of you to maybe save that person's life.
Yeah.
And panic isn't going to help anyone. So you're listening to Transformation Talk Radio. This is The Karmic Path, and I'm Tina Irwin. And when we come back, Laura Van Tine is going to take over talking to Raquel Murphy about what it's like to be a 911 operator and the things she did to help herself. And we'll be right back.
Have you ever wondered if there's a way to heal the deep, hidden inner issues, wounds, beliefs, and traumas? The Journey into Spiritual Healing engages people in all areas of their lives to heal themselves and others. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as Dr. Jaffe brings conversations of healing of body, mind, and spirit as he merges the excellence of traditional medicine with the beauty of spiritual healing. For more information about Dr. Jaffe, this show, and his work, visit drjaffemd.com.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day, we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com.
Tap into the wisdom of animals, angels, and masters with Darcy Pariso on Animal Soul Wisdom Radio. Tune in monthly as Darcy brings insights on how to better understand and deepen our relationships with animals. Working with light and pureness of ancient techniques, Darcy, healer, animal communicator, and medium, is here to guide you through this process and provide inspiration to move forward. For more information about working with Darcy, visit DarcyPariso.com.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone, guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
The truth is funny. Shift Happens with Colette Marie Steffen is excited to welcome Karen Benton as a monthly guest host. Tune in on the third Wednesday of each month at 8 a.m. Pacific time to regain confidence and trust in your capacity to create change in your life, your health, your family, and your well-being. Karen Benton is a mother, nurse practitioner, certified body talk practitioner, Franklin Method instructor, and owner of Limitless Living LLC. For more information about Karen, visit KarenBenton.com.
Learn and explore fascinating and practical uses of essential oils, how to use them, and how they can enhance your everyday life. The Oil Lounge was founded by three remarkable women with fascinating stories about how essential oils changed their lives. Tina and Laura from The Karmic Path have joined forces to educate the masses in the benefits of Young Living essential oils. For more information, visit theoillounge.com.
Back to the Karmic Path, and I am Laura Van Tine, and with Raquel here. We're sharing her today, which is great. I met Raquel a few years ago at a meeting, and one of the things that impressed me so much was she was talking about her experiences as this 911 operator, and then she mentioned how she would use essential oils in the 911 rooms because It's a somewhat stressful environment,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah.
Very stressful. I can't imagine what life is like when every phone call that you pick up is somebody having the worst day of their life.
Yeah.
Over and over and over.
100 times a day.
At least
100 times a day.
And you had mentioned that, oh, well, I use all these oils and I start diffusing them and I'm giving them out to my coworkers and stuff. And there's a few questions I have, but one of the questions I have is, what was one of your most valuable essential oils on the job, and why, what did it do for you?
Oh gosh. I'm an equal opportunity oil lover.
I know, right?
To pick one. Gosh. I mean, this was my little case. It's funny because okay. If any of my 911 friends are watching, they would probably still recognize this case. It now goes in my tennis bag or my soccer bag. I would stress away and peace and calming were one that I drowned myself in while I was there. And, probably stress away. That was probably my number one. And what I would just do is as soon as I'd answer the phone and, you know, we'd have a headset too, and you just press a clicker and then the call would drop in. And as soon as I'd hear the screaming, just that gut wrenching scream, I would know. And I would feel, especially for moms, I mean, we sympathize with them and we feel their pain. So I would, what's the address of 911, fire medical 349, what's the address of your emergency? And as I was doing that, because it has a little bit of time to drop in and they'll give the address and then you have to do the verification. But while I was doing that, I would do...
Just put the oil in your hands and inhale it.
Yeah, I would put a drop in my hands. I'd rub it together as I was talking to them. I'm ready now, wafting in the smell. And then...
And it's smelling good on the side. If you guys have smell-o-vision, it'd be great.
If you had smell-o-vision, we smell really good right now. So I would get the address and then, you know, I don't even remember what my next... I think it was, you know, what's your emergency? And then it would be like, my baby, or, ma'am, tell me what's the matter with your baby. And then, you know, my baby can't breathe. And then we'd start going into the call and we'd start treating, we'd start treating the call and start asking all the questions that we'd have to do. But the whole time I would have the scent and I would be smelling my hands. I'd be typing, but I had it with me and it was always on me.
Did you find it helped you focus?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Towards the end of the day, because we did 12-hour shifts, and towards the end of the day,
okay.
You were...
Question.
Yeah.
How many calls do you get in an hour?
Oh, well, you know what? If it's raining, you can get 50 calls in an hour.
Okay.
Because here in San Diego,
it never rains.
It doesn't
and
rain.
When it does, we freak out.
Oh, I would wake up in the morning and I was like, oh no, it wasn't supposed to rain. Oh, I got to get out of bed. I didn't have that 10-minute snooze anymore. I had to get out of bed because I knew it was going to take me longer to get to work. And I knew the minute I got on the dispatch floor, those calls would be boom, boom,
oh,
boom,
I bet.
One after another. And it's a traffic accident. And then every 50 car that's around that traffic accident is calling. You know, everybody wants to help.
Right.
So, okay, we've got that. So when it's raining, it could be every minute.
Wow.
Every minute.
So just a side note. After you left the 911, every time it rained, did you find yourself with like rain PTSD?
I would. I had, you know, it's funny. One of the things that I had for like a month after I left there, I would wake up. I would just wake, you know, your clock just to wake up 5 o'clock in the morning. And I would jump out of bed and my husband would say, you're not going to work today.
Yeah.
And my heart would just be racing. And then I'd go back to bed and the next day, and it took me like a month.
to break that.
That's a form of compassion fatigue, I would think, right?
I think it was PTSD. Yeah. It was it's just like, the fear of ever being late to work because it's, you know,
it's not like being late for an office job.
No, right. You're relieving the person who was there 12 hours the night before.
The same thing with teaching. You don't ever be late to your teaching job because you've got 30 or 40 kids waiting for you. Right, That's just dangerous.
Who's going to watch your kids?
Right.
Right. Yeah. So those days were rough, but we would do 6 hours on the phone and then we would switch. So you might start off on a radio and then you would go to the phone or vice versa. So you didn't have 12 hours on a phone.
Okay.
Ideally, that's not what they wanted you to do, but sometimes you had to.
I get that. I get that. Now I have a question for you because a couple years ago, I found myself having to call 911 and it was a scenario of what not to do. I mean, it was almost comedic.
Okay.
So in this, you know, when there is an accident, what not to do. So my daughter and I are driving down the street. I picked her up from school and we did some errands and we're driving back home. And I look at the corner where there's a gas station. I'm in Poway Road and I think Pomerado Road or something. And we see a bicyclist on the road in an accident. And my daughter's like, Mom, we got to stop. And we're at the stoplight. And I said, no, there's 5 people there. They will handle it.
Right.
And as soon as I said that, I watched these 5 men do everything wrong possible. Okay. Number one, we've got a bicyclist with a head injury.
Right.
Do we pick him up or not?
No.
Never.
You're not supposed to move him unless scene safety, unless he's in a spot where he's going to get run over by a car.
He was not going to get run over by a car because another car had pulled up a little bit.
Right. Yeah, ideally, with anyone with some type of physical injury that bad that sustained a major impact, you don't want to move them unless you have to, unless yourself, you're in danger or the patient's in danger.
Right. So these men picked up this bicyclist, stood him up, and that's when I pulled the car into the gas station. I ran out of the car because they let him go.
Oh, goodness.
So the man was literally falling. And as he's falling backwards, I scooped him up. And he was a big guy.
Yeah.
And I put him back down on the ground. Okay, step number two. This man clearly has a head injury.
Right.
Back injury, neck injury, I don't know. But he's bleeding all over his head.
Right.
Somebody else comes up and starts trying to force him to drink water.
No, we don't want to give them anything to eat or drink. That's it's actually when you're hanging up with the 911, they will tell them to keep them steady, you know, like apply firm, steady pressure on the wound. The first thing is they're going to stop the bleed. We don't want you to move them because if there's a neck injury, if there's a spine injury, you don't want to move them, but we're going to treat the bleeding. So apply firm, steady pressure. If it continues to bleed, you're not pressing hard enough. So you're applying firm, steady pressure. And then you don't want to give them anything to eat or drink.
Right. If they do, what's going to happen if they eat or drink something?
Well, I mean, you know, they could vomit.
Yeah. If they have a concussion, they're going to vomit.
They could have just ate their lunch and then got hit by a car, you know, like 2 seconds later. So it's ideally when they get to the hospital, they don't want to have had anything to eat or drink.
So those were 2 big strikes.
Right.
The other one is that none of these 5 guys called 911.
Well, because everyone assumed that somebody else
called 911. So I got this guy seated back down because he was going to fall and hit his head again. He's seated and I'm, you know, yelling at the guy to get the water away from his lips.
Right.
And it must have seemed like the biggest, you know what.
Yeah.
And then here's the interesting part. As you're observing the scene, sometimes things happen in slow motion.
Right.
There's a guy in a white car who pulled over, who is walking in a circle saying, I didn't hit him. I didn't hit him. I didn't hit him. I didn't hit him. So
maybe he hit him.
Maybe he hit him. Right.
Right.
And so anyways, I had my daughter call 911 and, you know, I'm yelling at her, you know, here we are, because it's like chaos. And, all of a sudden, the sky starts hallucinating. There's like crossfire going on and, you know, enemy of fire over here or there. So there's
the injured one.
The injured one. Sorry.
Okay.
And so then I start, okay, I know help is on the way. So that was huge. And it didn't take that long. But while help is on the way, I'm rifling through the guy's backpack, but I'm sitting him. He's still seated up because I don't know if I should lay him down or not.
Right.
Because he'd already moved.
Right.
and he still had his helmet on, and I wasn't sure if I should remove his helmet. So I didn't.
No, I mean, if you can hear the lights and sirens, let the paramedics do all of that. You just really, you want to keep them stable. If he started vomiting, you want to make sure that he's laying on his side. Everyone always like, which side? It doesn't matter. We just don't want him or her to choke on the vomit. Right. So you keep him on the side. That's like the same thing after a seizure. When they're done having the seizure, you roll them over on their side, because a very common thing post the seizure is vomiting. So that's just to keep them from swallowing or choking on the vomit.
All right. And Kat, I'm going to interrupt us here for a second. We're going to just cruise through this break again. And thank you for being patient with us, Kat.
Sorry, Kat.
All right. So don't move somebody who's been injured unless it's an emergency that they're going to get run over by a
scene
car.
Safety. If you're in a dangerous position or the patient is in a dangerous position.
Do not
give. We don't want to have multiple injuries.
Right. Yes. You don't want to give them any food or water because they're injured.
Eat or drink.
You need to call 911.
Yeah. Call 911. And you know what? That's really rare, because a traffic accident or something like that in a public place, we usually would get like 10 or 15 calls, oh, there's an accident, bicyclist. Okay. All right. We got it. We're ready. Help's on the way. But one of the things that we would do is we'd say, are you with the patient? And then we would keep the person if we're getting 10 calls.
And that's what they were telling me is that, are you still there? You know, stay there. Don't leave.
You want to keep the reporting party with the patient so we can keep an eye on the patient and we can triage the call with you being right next to the patient. So when we get 10 of these calls because of a traffic accident or a vehicle versus cyclist, we want to keep the call that is the reporting party with the patient. Okay. All of the passerbys, we got the call. Thank you so much. Because they're not going to do anything for, we'll get whatever information. Did you see the person that hit them? You know, PD will stay on the line and then take that information. So whoever hit them and get that information. But we want to triage the call. So we like to keep the reporting party who's with the patient on the line.
All right. That's great advice. And, you know, interestingly enough, so I go through the man's backpack while we're waiting. Because I'm thinking he's got a family.
Right.
And so I find the button that says wife on it, literally. So I called his wife, which I thought that was interesting. So the cell phone, you know, I have my husband labeled as Sean, but maybe I should also label him as husband.
Yeah, or Ice in case of an emergency. Yeah, Ice.
And I know Tina has that for us. So she's Ice on the email. So we could do Ice on the phone too, which I hadn't, you know, thought of before.
Yeah, I have my husband is, his name is Jerry, and then he's Ice husband.
Okay, that's a good tip. And I think that's really important for kids too.
Oh, absolutely. For kids to have mom, dad, and then in case of emergencies for like the aunts or uncles, you know, if they can't get in touch with us, let's say we're out of the country and they're staying at my mom's house, but they get hit by a car and everyone's calling mom and dad.
Right.
You know, then if you just go Ice, okay, then they'll see aunt, uncle. So Ice is really...
I think I might need to change my phone when I...
Right. But that's something. After this. One more thing. I know. Because safety never takes a holiday. No, that's great
though, because it doesn't, right? You know, life happens when we're busy making other plans.
Right. And that's just the thing is that one of the things, one of my big takeaways is to always be prepared. Like literally Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts, be prepared. When you travel, I was just talking about going overseas. When you travel, 911 is not an emergency line. In Europe, it's, I think, 211. I actually wrote it down for you.
All right. When you're traveling outside of this country.
Every country has a different emergency code.
Know the code. Know the emergency code. Wherever you're at, know that emergency code outside of the country. And I remember you were telling us a story about a German tourist or some, maybe French tourist or something who was fortunate enough. He was by himself, but he ended up calling 911 because he knew.
He called 911 and he was in the OB area. And I could barely understand him because it was a really windy day. And you know, when you're on the cell phone and the wind is going at the beach, your phones are only picking up the wind. And then he had a very strong accent. So it was very difficult for me to understand him, but he can speak English. So you want to try to keep them on the line as opposed to get the translator and that delay, because I could understand him, but I probably would have been able to understand him better had it not been so windy. So he didn't know where he was. He said he wasn't familiar. He was visiting. And I was trying, I sent help on the way. He kept saying his eye.
So we started the engines going in that direction, knowing that they were heading just to head that way, but not having the exact location. So I said, is there anyone around you? And he said, yes. And I said, hand them the phone and tell them you're talking to 911. So he handed them the phone, and this poor guy got on the phone, and you can just hear it in his voice. He was in a state of shock. Oh, no. And he was like, hello. And I said, this is a 911 operator. We have help on the way. Can you give us the address of the emergency? And he's like, I don't know where I am. I said, look around you. Are you in front of houses? Are you in front? He's like, we're by the beach. I'm like, give me some cross streets. So he's like, oh, I see a street sign. He ran over, got the street sign, told me the exact location. Now we have the exact location. I'm typing that, updating the engine. That's already en route. And then I said, tell me exactly what's happening. And he goes, he's holding his eyeball in his hand.
Oh, God.
And it's still connected.
Oh.
And apparently he was body surfing and he hit his head on the jetty and his eyeball popped out. So wow. Can you imagine the people just passerby?
Oh, my God.
This guy coming up and handing him a phone and saying it's 911 and he's holding his eyeball.
And to have that guy still conscious.
He was conscious.
Right?
And that he was so good because not only did he call 911, like he was so patient.
And so at some point, you have to wonder if their higher self sort of kicked in and took over.
I absolutely think because sometimes people just, it's like, they don't know. There's no distraction right. around them. They're just so zeroed in on it.
Right.
And in spite of, he knew how windy it was. And he knew, like, it was hard for him to hear me as well.
Right.
And so that was a very difficult call. And I said that we often play charades, just like mm-hmm. the other call with, you know, you have to visualize the woman that had asthma. You have to visualize yourself there and just kind of think like, okay, I know that part of town. I know there's condos right. there. I know, like, you just try to really figure out what you
and
can do.
And that's good advice for anybody in any situation is to mm-hmm. know your surroundings.
Right. Situational awareness. Absolutely.
You know, we're talking about oils and such. And I'm going to go back to the story with my daughter and this bicyclist. Mm-hmm. After everything was done and said, my daughter looks up and she says, oh, Mom, that was my English teacher. That's his bicycle.
No.
And all of a sudden, we were calm, cool, collected. We were helpful. We were on point. But when she said that, we both started, it was like the adrenaline kicked right. in and we're shaking because now we know him.
Now you know him. It made it personal.
It made it personal. And I'm yeah. covered in his blood, which I was grateful to know who he was because I was covered right. in his blood. And it was a brand new outfit that I never got to wear again.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But, you know,
yeah.
life goes on.
Yeah, life goes on. I know. But then it made it personal. That's why I think that we had a layer of protection because you don't see what's right. happening.
Yeah.
You only hear about what's happening and we don't get names.
Yeah.
We don't get names.
Yeah. And we ended up, and I mean, we are just like, both of us are just like shaking like a leaf at this right. moment in right. time. And, you know, his wife ended up coming and getting the bike and things like that, which I'm not sure it was actually usable again, but, we did two things afterwards when I got home. One is I had lavender essential oil. And because that oil helps to calm, and I put it in our hands and we're just like inhaling this stuff.
Right.
Which was helpful. But the other remedy that we used was a Bach flower rescue remedy.
Oh, you've told me about rescue remedy.
And rescue remedy is an amazing little product. And that was the first time I'd really, truly used it. And as you know, I put it on under my daughter's tongue, a few drops under her tongue and under my tongue. And it was just like all that shakiness just instantly went away.
Right.
And my daughter's like, wow, what was that, Mom? And we needed it like every 10 or 15 minutes for a while, but we were using lavender oil and, you know, eventually some frankincense and stuff just yep. to calm down.
This is my
down.
Rescue remedy.
Yes.
And
yes.
you can ingest this as well. So.
Frankincense.
Yeah.
If it's good enough for Jesus, it's good enough for
good
us.
Good enough for JC. It's good enough for me.
Yes. That's the rule here. It's a very high frequency oil, which is why, you know, he was gifted this. Nobody ever asked.
147 megahertz. This has been measured
okay.
to have the frequency. So that's one of the things I'd also put this under my tongue.
Okay. Yeah. That's a good tip also. Yeah. And I have ingested it before because it really helps.
Yeah. And you gave me the frankincense tea recipe with the resin.
Yes.
Yeah,
so you can
use. That night we met?
Yes, that's right. I remember that. So if you need to kind of ramp up your frequency, you can Google frankincense tea and find the recipe on the mm-hmm. internet. But these,
not every frankincense is ingestible.
That is true. And you want a good quality.
Good quality.
I actually know quantity. If you go to theoillounge.com, they have good quality frankincense. So check out theoillounge.com. And this is, you know, we're talking with Raquel, who's one of the founding members of the Oil Lounge for a good reason. She's used these products in her career. And I remember that first night I had met you several years ago, you talked about how you would gift these oils to your coworkers all the time. Mm-hmm. And what a great gift.
I would bring it out. And it was so funny because at the beginning, everybody was kind of like, what is she doing?
Yeah, what kind of hocus pocus is that?
Who's the hippie down there? What's that hippie girl doing? But slowly but surely, you know, women, I think that were more open to it. So a group of women would come over and I would say, here you go. We'd pass it around. And we are also in a room that was no ventilation and closed windows, no circulation. And if one person got sick, it was like an airplane, you know, the room was like an airplane. Yeah. So we would constantly get sick. Everybody would get sick. And that was one of the reasons why I bought the kit was so I can take them to work and not get sick. So I used to take.
Because when you take the sickness home, you start
fun.
Playing past that virus with your children. And that's just not fun.
Right. And the thing about it is a stressful environment will also repress your immune system.
Yeah.
So when you're stressed, your immunity goes down. So I used to take these every morning. I would drink my coffee. When I was done with my coffee, I would just, it's a brand new bottle. And now don't try this at home. I've been using this as a hot oil, but I would just take a drop right under my tongue.
You know, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but I'm going to say it anyways.
Oh, it smells so good.
I know it does. I use it all the time. I use Thieves all the time because I'm allergic to every antibiotic on the planet and, you know, penicillin, et cetera. And then, you know, I think it was after I had one of my kids, I had mastitis or something. And the doctor says, well, if you're allergic to penicillin, you can take this one. It was some kind of Cephalosporin or something. And you know, less than a 1% chance that you'll have this an allergic reaction to it. Oh, guess what? Yeah, that was me.
So, better odds at playing lotto than getting this reaction.
I know. So, you know, even Neosporin or something like that, I will start. It causes stripes on my skin.
Oh, wow.
It's so bizarre. So I can't use antibiotics, but thank goodness for Thieves because I can use it and I've used it to heal cuts. I've used it for lung infections, whatever it is. So there is a lot there with Thieves and I think I have about 20 of them just in case.
Oh yeah. I mean, I might even have more than multiple. Let me see in this bag because I also just grab it and travel with it and I double check. No, I actually just have one here today, but it was a brand new bottle.
So Thieves is a great essential oil. Lavender is a great general one. And
the Swiss Army knife of essential oils, lavender.
When in doubt,
use lavender.
And, you know, make sure that you get a good quality oil because not all oils are made the same. Yeah. There's a lot of oils that are in regular box stores now that are actually not essential oils, but they are perfumes cut with a little bit of essential oil.
Right.
It's not the same and it won't have that same effect.
Right. And I'll teach a class and I'll talk about how Young Living has the Vitality line where these are ingestible. And basically what's in the peppermint Vitality line is the exact same oil that's in the regular peppermint, but they label it differently so we can teach you that you can ingest it as well as use it for headaches or stomach aches.
And, you know, if you're interested in essential oils, definitely go to theoillounge.com, sign up because they have all kinds of free classes full of good information. One of the reasons why I really have enjoyed about the Oil Lounge, and I've known you guys for a while, is the fact that you are educated, you know your material, you know your product. That makes a huge difference. And if you sign up at theoillounge.com, you will get a ton of information that is free to use, free for you. And it's so beneficial.
We try.
It's good karma.
We just don't want, it is very good karma, but we don't want you to get the kit and then leave it at home on the shelves because they're not going to support your systems sitting on the shelves.
Yeah, they look pretty.
They look pretty. I had one of my mom's cousins, she bought a kit and I was asking her how things were going and support. And she was like, well, and I said, well,
are you using them?
Yeah.
And she goes, no, I lined them up on my shelf and they look really pretty.
Yeah, and
I
was use like, them and look, they still look pretty, yeah. Right?
I'm like, they're gonna provide some frequency in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah. And zero in on your system.
And we hope that this show has been beneficial. Raquel, thank you so much. There's been a ton of really good tips and tricks and just good general safety knowledge and information. And I want to thank Kat Grebe so much, our producer, who is so flexible today. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Kat.
You've been listening to The Karmic Path on Transformation Talk Radio, and we will see you next week. Thank you very much.